Aviation Quest is C101, wind 270 degrees, 10 knots, runway 27 left, cleared for takeoff.
Aviation Quest CC101, cleared for takeoff, 27 left. V1, rotate. Positive climb.
Aviation Quest CC. Stories from above. The views shared in this podcast are personal and for informational purposes only. They do not reflect any employer or aviation authority, and nothing discussed here should be considered flight training or regulatory guidance. Please always refer to official sources. This episode may also contain product placements. For further information, visit our website aviation-quest.cc.
This is November 20th. We are already in the 11th episode of Aviation Quest CC. My name is Jürgen, and luckily enough, also today, the expert on the other side, and certainly the expert for this episode, the second, so to say, podcast pilot in command, Stefan. Hello, live on tape.
Hello, hi. How are you today? All good?
All good, all good. Windy day outside, but yeah, for an airliner, wouldn't be a problem. And yeah, coincidentally, we thought we changed from gliders to the real world, to the big ones, huh?
Yes, a little bit. Well, let's see. Well, you start talking and then we'll go into how to get into the big ones.
Yeah, first let's get into the big one on our YouTube channel before we forget. It's Aviation Desk Quest Podcast. So we got a homepage that's aviation-quest.cc, and we have a YouTube channel, Aviation-Quest Podcast, even though we are an audio cast, and by the work of Stefan, thank you for your engagement there, Stefan. We got a YouTube video for every podcast, so everybody who wants to enjoy this audio together as a flight sim, so to say, inspiration video, feel free to do so. And Stefan, what a real world flight is there today for the 11th episode?
Okay, for the 11th episode, we are going to the US and we'll be flying a JetBlue flight with an Airbus A321. From JFK, so New York, to Orlando.
Sounds great. And well, with this, we are already back on the homepage. I got it right in front of me, and there's a neat little sentence in your bio that you, so it's something along the lines of that you eventually return fully into the skies by earning your commercial pilot license at the Oxford Aviation Academy and joining a large international airline where you fly now, the A320. Yeah, and we thought this neat little line is enough for 3 episodes.
Well, that's because of our experience with the FAQ, which we thought would be 1 episode and ended up being 10. So we are already being cautious, I think.
I'm already under pressure. I'm already putting pressure on this project. Huh? No, let's get started. As listeners maybe already recognized it in the teaser, it's about the flight training you observed. And the first part of this 3-part series is about your ground school phase at the Oxford, as I said, Oxford Aviation Academy. Now I got it right. And yeah. When did you went to this university, or when did this all took off, so to say, literally speaking, or academy?
It was quite a long time ago. The Oxford Aviation Academy is now called something different. They merged with, I think it was CAE. So if you Google that, the Oxford Academy, maybe you will still know about it and direct you to CAE. I think it's just called CAE Oxford now. So, but that tells you how long ago this was. I think we're talking 2007, something like that.
Yeah.
So, just to explain, in order to if you want to fly airliners, of course, you have to do lots of flying in small aircraft, which is what I alluded to do before when you talked about the big ones. You always start in small ones. You always start, you know, in a Cessna or in a Warrior or whatever. That's where every single pilot starts. But on top of that, you also need to learn a lot of theory, a lot of air law about meteorology, all that stuff. So usually it's a year or something of ground school, which is very demanding. And that's where I did my ground school.
Okay. So give us a little bit of an overview. I mean, we said we focus part one on the ground school, part two on the flight training. You observed, I think, mainly in Canada. Am I correct here?
Yeah, it was both in the US and in Canada.
In the US, in the UK?
Yeah, UK as well. I flew UK, US, Canada. We can go into more detail next episode when I explain why
I did it. And the third episode, just to give the listeners an overview, is, so to say, from flight school to the first airline cockpit seat. But yeah, step by step, back to the ground school phase. And yeah, maybe my university misspelling is already correct now. No, let's keep it in Oxford. Let's just say the Oxford ground school phase. I think it's anyway. Let's start with a simple question. How would you choose the flight school? Simple question, complex answer, I know.
It's actually not a simple question.
For me, it's simple, I know.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's be honest. If you just want to do a PPL and fly around in your spare time, you usually go to a flying club or something like that. Then you choose the club you like, your local club. You know, maybe you have friends there. But if you go down the commercial route, the choice of flight school actually becomes very important. If this is the route you want to take, if you're thinking of becoming an airline pilot, make sure you do your homework, make sure you do your research. There are flight schools that have a very good reputation. They have contracts with airlines. So usually they are the ones that supply pilots to the airlines. And those should be your preferred route. Now, I'm sorry to say, these will usually be more expensive, and they will also be a lot stricter in terms of, you know, getting you through the course. They expect a lot more from you in terms of marks and gradings. And because they have a reputation with the airlines that they supply them good pilots, and they want to keep that reputation, they want to keep their contracts with the airlines, so they will not accept anyone who falls behind. That's the price you have to pay. So if you really serious about this, you go to one of those schools that will prep you the best as they can for the world of airliner flying. Like I said, unfortunately, it's going to be a bit more money. It's going to be very hard work. They put a lot of pressure on you. But the result is that you are going to be a good pilot at the end, and you're going to be the kind of pilot that the airlines want to hire.
Just a little tip of mine when it comes to the costs, scholarships or cadet programs. I mean, it depends of when you listen to this podcast, but they could be also available on the time you listen to them. Please do your research. I think you usually find them, Stefan, even on the homepages of the big carriers. Otherwise, the good old Google would lead you to a way, or maybe also a mentor, somebody who knows aviation. What's your take on that? Certainly, people can also write in here on our homepage, and we will do our best. But what's your take on scholarship or cadet programs? I mean, if you are young enough and qualified?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, pilot training is very expensive. And the things are changing. Now, as we record this, we're in the year 2025, towards the end of the year. So I don't know when people will listen to this, but right now, at this moment in time, there is a massive, massive pilot shortage all across the globe. Airlines are still ordering aircraft like crazy. I don't know if you read, the Dubai Air Show just finished, and Fly Dubai ordered 250 A320s, Etihad ordered, I can't remember how many, they ordered A320neos fly Dubai. Etihad ordered A350s, I can't remember how many. So, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds of aircraft are being ordered, but even the existing fleets that we have right now often cannot be, you know, staffed with pilots. And so what is changing right now is that more and more airlines are willing to pay for the pilot training. There was a big announcement by a big European airline, I think it was 2 days ago, where they said you have to do an assessment. And if you're good enough, they will actually pay for your entire training and you end up with an A320 type rating and you will fly for them. Now, of course, what that means is because they paid for all that training, you will have to stay with them for a number of years to basically, you know, pay that back in a sense. You can't just do the training there and go somewhere else. So you have a bond, that's how it's called. But, you know, if you are young, you don't have the funds available, which, let's be honest, not many people have. I think right now is not a bad time because more and more airlines are realizing if they want pilots, they have to pay because the market is empty. The competition is fierce between the companies. I get emails from other airlines constantly asking me if I want to fly for them. They're sending me, you know, their salaries and everything. So everybody's competing for the existing pilots. And I personally think if you can find a scholarship or anything like that, right now at this moment in time is actually a great time to start because there are no signs that the pilot shortage is going away.
All right. And as I said, I mean, do your research, but it shouldn't be too hard to find. Stefan said maybe also the airlines themselves. I guess really the homepages of the airlines is maybe a first and very good address.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Go. And, you know, make sure, like before I decided on my flight school, I visited several different flight schools. I went there personally, walked around. I wanted to see the facilities. I asked them questions. You're going to spend a lot of money there. You want to make sure that
and
the
time,
money is spent.
Time and money.
Exactly. Make sure that whatever you do, wherever you go, you do your research. It's going to be a good school that will look after you and that will support you in any shape you or and form. So, yeah, like you said, do your research. These days, it's a lot easier than when I started. Online forums, people, you know, that leave reviews. So take that time because you're talking about a big investment.
Yeah, let's go into your concrete ground school phase. How long did it take you? And what was your impression? Also, I mean, this Oxford campus must be quite impressive. How did you personally, you know, what was your takeaway? How did you perceive it?
Right. So, now I fly with a lot of pilots that did the flight training all over the world. Some did it in Spain. We even have some that did it in New Zealand, you know, others did it in Germany. The thing is, each country, in my opinion, has a bit of a different approach on how how you operate an aircraft. I did all my training in the UK. The UK is seen as a part of the world where they are extremely procedure driven. So what that means is they really want you to study hard. They want you to know everything by heart. Every procedure, every checklist, every wording has to be exactly like in the books. And that's how they drill you. So this was my experience and also, but this, I'm used to it. I used to live in England for 20 years. England, when it comes to any kind of education, is quite structured and strict. So on the first day when I went there, we got our uniforms, our pilot uniforms with a uniform code. And they made it very clear, if you come with, I don't know, white socks instead of black socks, you're going home. You are not being allowed into the classroom. So it was a very structured, very disciplined affair. And they also made it very clear that, because you ask how long it took, I think ground school was around about a year, something like that, if I remember correctly. And on the first day, they made it very clear, for this period of time, put your social life on pause. You need to focus on this, because if you don't perform, we will kick you out. We cannot have people in here that fail, so they made that very clear. So that's what I was talking about in terms of pressure. But at the same time, they were super nice. The people that trained me were extremely knowledgeable. They were veterans of the airliner world and also military world. One of my trainers used to be a captain on Concorde. Another guy used to fly the Vulcan bomber. You know, these guys, wow. They really knew their stuff. And if they saw that you were trying, that you were working hard, they were super nice, super supportive. They had no problem sitting down with you, explaining things where you're struggling with, you know. Once they realized you are committed, you are dedicated, it was super nice. They were actually very supportive and did everything they could to help me to get through the course. And like with everything, there are things you're really good at and there are things you're maybe not so good at. And there's nothing wrong with that. We are all humans. We have our strengths. We have our weaknesses. And the weaknesses is just what you have to work at. And in the end, my ground school ended with a really, really, really good result. I can't the exact number, but I think my average with the CAA ATPL exams was 97%, which is very good, apparently. And in two subjects, I even achieved 100%, which is super rare, apparently. Anyway, you need to put in a lot of work. You need to be prepared to study. You need to be prepared to, you know, sit in there, study the whole day, have all the lessons the whole day, then go home, study some more, prepare for the next day. So during that time, I just switched off all social life. I completely focused on that. And the result was that I got really good marks, a really good I left a good impression with the school. And then if they are happy with that, then they will also recommend you to the airlines. If they come to the school and say, we need 20 guys, they will pick the best 20 and say, yeah, we have these, see what you think. And they will then put you forward for the selection. So ground school is a lot to learn. There's a lot of maths, a lot of physics. But for me personally, if you're into aviation, if you love the whole topic, there's so much interesting stuff. We had a whole course on hydraulics and aerodynamics and power plants. And I was super fascinated by the whole subject. I also loved meteorology and climatology. I thought it was super interesting. And if you're interested in something, then it's very easy to learn because your brain just sucks it up like a sponge. So go in there with the approach that this is all super cool stuff. You're going to learn some really interesting things. And if that's your mindset, then already it's a lot easier.
But certainly it demands a lot of self-discipline and also long study evenings and weekends. And yeah, I mean, how did you handle those 14 ATPL subjects? I mean, I think it was the same in your time. You observed the flight school in a parallel manner. This is for me a little bit, sounds like juggling.
Yeah, the way they did it was you did six subjects first for the first half. Then you did your exams, and when only if you passed them at a good grade were you allowed to tackle the other six subjects. But you're right, learning six different subjects at the same time, most of which, you know, there were some which were full of formulas, you know, especially anything to do with the aerodynamics and calculating, I can't remember, the lift to drag.
I was just thinking now, when I have to switch from air load to meteorology back to flight training and then to, I don't know, instrument and maybe communications, it sounds a little bit, and then, yeah, in the end of the day, some human performance sounds a little bit all over the place for the brain.
it was. I mean, the way they did it was, like I said, this some time ago, I don't know.
Exaggerating for sure. You will not have all those stuff in one day, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. But what they did was we had internal exams from the school in each subject on a regular basis to basically check your progress. And these exams were actually tougher than the CEA exams. And they were sort of a self-test to see, you know, in this subject, you're not doing well. So I would suggest you put in some hours. That was sort of the thing, how they did it, how to track your progress. And only if you were really good in all six subjects would they even allow you to go to the CAA and sit the official exams. They didn't want you to go there if you had weak spots somewhere. So, yeah, you're right. 14 subjects altogether. I can't even remember how they split it. Was it 8 first? I don't know. It was something weird. I can't remember, because somewhere there was a bit of overlap with some of them. Or was it 7? I can't remember. Anyway, you just need to, the way I did it was, obviously I tried to, at the beginning, give equal time to each subject, but then in some subjects you become really good and you find it really easy, so you pull back on that and concentrate on the stuff that's not so easy. Air law for me was, wow, I that was such a dry
I can't imagine.
I don't want to say boring, but you know, it's
in the glider. In the glider school, I remember this summer in Styria. I mean, we really had, in comparison to 80 PL, we had just the basics. But yeah, it is. I mean, it is what it is. It is air law. You have to learn it, and often also by heart. And afterwards, I think also you, this is, you have to learn it, period.
Yeah, you have to, because it's what you're operating in. So unfortunately, it's an important part of the course. But air law is written by lawyers, and that's how, you know, that's how you read it, and that's how you have to study it, and all the wording. And yeah, not my favorite, I have to say. But there were some really cool subjects. I loved anything to do with technology, like when you learn how a modern turbofan engine works. And all that stuff. That stuff for me was super interesting, and I found it very easy to pick up because I was, you know, motivated to memorize everything. But to sum it up, yes, you have all these subjects, and like I said, I can't remember how they're being split, if it's an even split between first and second part or not. But you will have to juggle them, concentrate on the stuff that you're not so good at. Make sure, you know, there's no point in getting 100% in one subject when you only get, I don't know, 60 in another, because 60 is not good enough. So just spread your time, because there's only so much time you have. So spread it out in a clever and efficient way. Let's put it this way.
Stefan, was this 1 year purely theory, or was there maybe also some simulator time, or maybe even a hop in a little Cessna or something like this included sometimes, you know, a little bit fun?
No, again, I'm afraid.
Again, exaggerating, you know, it was interesting, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but no, it's only ground school. Okay. That's it. There's no flying, nothing. You're just study, 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 study. And some schools will actually start with this. So you have to do all of this before you ever set foot in any kind of aircraft, because their idea is that by the time you start flying, you should be fully knowledgeable. Other flight schools will first do a PPL with you and then do the CPL, ATPL ground school, because they think then it makes more sense if you've actually flown an aircraft to learn about all these things. There's different ways of doing it. In my case, I already had some flight experience beforehand because I was part of a flying club that had nothing to do, you know, with the academy. This was just my hobby. I was flying around in England in Warriors as part of a flying club. So when I joined, I already had an idea of how aircraft worked, and I already had a PPL and a night rating and all that stuff. So I'm not going to say that made the ATPL that much easier, but at least I had an idea of, you know, about how to fly aircraft.
But somehow this all makes certainly sense, because also money-wise, I mean, if you are unable to observe the theory and then go beforehand to US and Canada, and I mean, this flight training is often, it's immensely expensive, and it would be a completely waste of time and money if a student is not able to perform, with those 14 ATPL subjects. I guess you agree this is also somehow, I don't know if there is some money back, but if you are unable, you know, if you have, you have to stop, then it's better to stop in the theory than to stop in, you know, all the, as soon as you're in the air, it's getting really expensive.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely agree. You need to hack the ground school first. And then if you're good enough with that, I mean, don't get me wrong, there are people that are very, very good at ground school and not so good at flying. They're two completely different skill sets. There's no guarantee that someone who aces ground school is going to be an amazing intuitive pilot. There were still people that were kicked out during the flying phase. It does happen. So there's no guarantee. But I do agree you should start with the cheaper part first, which is the ground school. And once you've gone through that, you can start with the expensive part and see how far you get there. I think for me personally, it's the better way of doing it. But before you even embark on that route, like we said before, I would always try to get at least a tiny bit of flying under my belt, just to see if it suits me, if I can, you know, if it's something I actually like. And that's where we come back to the gliders. We talked about this. They are very cheap and good way of starting off in aviation. And with that experience under the belt, you will see that flight training is going to be a bit easy, because it's not all theory. Because if you've already flown an aircraft, you know what it's all about. You understand drag, you understand lift, you understand all these things. You know what a yawing moment is. If you've never been in an aircraft and these are all things you've never heard about, then, you know, the learning curve is a lot steeper. So my advice would be, go to your local flying club, go to your local glider club, you know, do some experience hours, see if you like.
I was just thinking about an introduction flight with a motor glider. I mean, it gives you an idea if your body and mind can handle it and if you like it, because the flight training, as Stefan said, you have to be able to perform well or to feel well in a little plane. You don't start with an A320.
Exactly. And if you do the ground school, especially aerodynamics, and they start talking about, I don't know, lift, drag, high lift devices, spoilers, and all that stuff, and you have no idea what any of these things mean because you have never, ever been in an aircraft, of course you can learn it, but it makes it a lot harder, I think. And you could tell the people that were in my course that had already flown for a while, for them, a lot of the things they didn't need to study because they already knew them from the PPL and all that stuff. So if to give yourself a head start and maybe also to see if this is actually something you would enjoy, like Jürgen said, I absolutely agree. Get yourself some hours somewhere in a glider or at the flight school to see if this is something you're actually going to enjoy.
Stefan, one of the last questions I certainly was just speculating about, maybe being unable to master the ground school or, you know, to have to give up or before the real money phase, so to say, in the US and Canada starts. Did you ask questions like this? Or, you know, this is, I think, also almost back to air law. No, it's the fine print of the flight school. I mean, what happens if you are really think after a month or two, oh, this is, I don't know, I thought I can make it, but I can't. And did you ask questions like this in the beginning? Or what is the reality here? I think it's also, it's highly dependent of the contract you got with the flight school or with the cadet program. I mean, there must be, yeah, I think there must be huge differences, but maybe also for sleeping better, questions that should have been, should be asked before.
Yeah. So, I can only speak for the flight schools I know, and they usually do it that you don't pay everything up front. It's sort of like a pay-as-you-go scheme. So you will pay. Yeah, so you will pay for the first whatever it is, 7 exams and the first 7 subjects. And if that goes well, you pay for the next 7. So you're never going to lose all the money. But of course, if you start ground school and you pay for the first 7 subjects, and after a few months, you realize that there's just no way I can do this. Unfortunately, with pretty much any flight school I know, that money will be gone. So you're not going to get that back. So, yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? But, I mean, this is not just flight school. You have this in many parts.
You got the education and, yeah. Maybe there are also checks beforehand you can observe, it's hard to, from my perspective, double hard to answer this question, but I think you have to feel it that you want it, that you really want it. And also, yeah, I think the other factors like age and everything should be, you should be somewhere in a zone where it's realistic, also money-wise, the whole life situation. This is what comes to my mind spontaneously.
Yeah. Also, some flight schools actually do an assessment with you before they even allow
this
you.
This would be maybe a wise way, yeah, that you have a ballpark figure where you are. Yeah.
Exactly. They check your aptitude, they check your maths, your physics, knowledge, all that stuff. And only if it's good enough will they even allow you to take part in the course. So it's not all of them, but
medically beforehand, before we forget.
Yeah, exactly. That's another big topic, the medical. I mean, look. The way I would look at it is this. I remember on the first or second day of ground school, we had an introduction. They walked us around. They showed us everything. We got our uniforms. And I think it was on the second day, we got all the books we needed. And I literally, there were so many books. And I flicked through them and all I saw was formulas and graphs and chapters about things I had
home
no
with
idea
a
about.
Case.
Yeah. So you know, it and you sit there with these pages and pages, and I guess today it's maybe all on an iPad. I don't know. With me was these thick books that we got, and you feel overwhelmed because you know that by the end of this year, the entire knowledge of all these books needs to be in your head and probably more. And I'll never forget when I carried all these books to the car to drive back home. And I looked at the books on the back seat. There were so many, and they were also thick and looked complicated. And I thought, there's no way I can do this. But the way you need to look at this, first of all, you don't have to study this all at once. You have a whole year. Break it down into different subjects. Break down each subject into different chapters. And you will see if you study, it's actually not that difficult. I always say this to people, if I can do this, then anyone can do this. Because I was never at school, I was never a brilliant student or anything like that. I was average at best, and that was it. And still, with a lot of hard work and dedication, when I did the ground school, I got really, really good marks and results. The flight school was super happy with me. So, you know, it can be done. It's not impossible. So you just have to put your mind to it and work hard. And that's it.
Stefan, a very last question from my side. I mean, certainly you can add separate information afterwards if you want, but you mentioned just the marks and the percentages. I think they are also really important when it comes to be interesting for the airlines. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know, these are things that are not official, but flight schools, well, the flight school I was at, they would say, you know, they look at your average score in your CA exam results. And if they are below a certain percentage, different airlines treat this differently. Some airlines say, we don't want to see anyone that's below 90%, others below 95%. You know, it depends on the airline. Yeah, if you're below that, then they're not even going to invite you to an interview. And on your CV, at least when I started off applying to the airlines, they would ask, what is your ATPL? You know, what were your ATPL results like? And they wanted to see the official results, the official marks from the CAA. So you couldn't just make it up. So you had to include them in your application and they would go through your results. So this is not just something you have to get through to go flying. This is career defining. So make sure you put the work, you go to work there and get good results, because this can be a deciding factor whether one day you're going to get that dream job on a, I don't know, Dreamliner or A350 or not. Yeah.
Stefan, I think these were just the most hardcore motivating words in the last 3 minutes of a podcast on this topic ever done in the history.
I really hope this wasn't too negative. I really
everybody
hope
who's in the flight school will now click, you know, switch off, back to the books, hit the books.
Stefan, well, Stefan. Just at the end. I know it sounds scary. I know it sounds hard. It is hard. I'm not going to lie to you. You have to study a lot. But thousands of people do it every year and they get through with good marks. So it is possible. It has to be possible, because there are thousands and thousands of pilots out there that fly all these jets like myself. So it can be done. You just work, study, and then it's easy. And that's all I'm going to say.
All I'm going to say now is, yeah, thank you for every second. It was, I think, super, super interesting for the listeners. We are looking forward for the comments. You can also find us certainly on Spotify and the usual podcast providers out there. And yeah, also there, thumbs up and comments, always a nice thing. And yeah, Stefan, is there anything you want to add to this episode? Otherwise, I think we are already on the end or at the end.
No, I think we've discussed everything. Like we said, the focus today was only on the ATPL ground school. And then we covered the other parts of becoming a pilot in the next two episodes. No, from my side, everything good. I think we covered everything. Thanks to everyone for watching. Sorry, to listening. Well, if you're on YouTube, you're watching,
and
right?
Watching.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so used to this now from my YouTube channel. So thanks.
Which is,
to
by
everyone.
The way, FS Clips. FS Clips, yeah, is, yeah, on YouTube channel. Yeah, I mean, from exactly. My side, as I said, one more time, thank you for your time. And I'm already looking forward for the 12th episode where we cover the flight training phase.
Exactly. Thanks to everyone, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to Aviation Quest CC, Stories from Above. For more information about this episode and everything we do, visit our homepage, aviation-quest.cc. We appreciate your time and support, and we'd love to have you back for the next episode. Until then, stay safe, stay curious, and keep your passion for aviation flying high.